I'm Brian Ellison, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. It's opening day of the 2019 Major League Baseball season when every team takes the field and anything is possible. We are live from Kauffman Stadium, hoping rain doesn't stop the first pitch as the Kansas City Royals take on the Chicago White Sox. After last year's 104 losses, this will be a rebuilding season for the boys in blue. We'll find out where the team's looking to improve and which players to keep an eye on. We'll also meet some folks working behind the scenes here at the K, whether booking musical acts, making a perfect toss with a bag of peanuts, or keeping the team in good health. The ballpark experience wouldn't be the same without them. We'll play ball on Up to Date after this hour's news.
It's time for the Kauffman Stadium Hot Dog Derby. Who's your favorite? They're ready to roll from the bullpen in right field. On your mark, get set, go!
That is the sound of Kauffman Stadium announcer Mike McCartney narrating the Hot Dog Derby, a fan favorite here at the K. That's where we are today on an overcast day with thunderstorms in the forecast for game time, but hey, batting practice is getting set up on the field. There are dozens of workers all over the stadium getting ready for opening day nonetheless. We'll go to the Diamond itself in a little while, talk about what's happening there today. But first, we're talking to Nikki Averso. Nicole Averso is Director of Event Presentation for the Royals. And on this very busy day for her, she's joining us for a few minutes on Up to Date. Nikki, thanks for doing this.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you again.
So, me too.
So once the show starts here at the stadium, once the gates are open, just about everything that fans see goes through you. In fact, I know you have only a few minutes here because you have a big production meeting.
Yes, we have our meeting here in about 20 minutes to get the game started.
And what happens at that meeting?
So this meeting is a little bit different because we have all three of our production staff. So we have our Crown Vision crew that puts together. They are in charge of anything that you see that actually goes up on Crown Vision, the scoreboard, the LED boards, any of the stats, replays, pretty much anything graphically, production-wise, has to go through them. There's about 20 or so people. You've been up in the control room with
me.
So you've seen that it actually takes a lot more people to put things on than you would actually think.
Right. It all looks so effortless and smooth to the fan in the crowd.
Exactly. And then when you come up into our control room, you kind of see there's about 30 people that it takes to do that. So we have our meeting with all of them, as well as we have six cameras around. We have two wireless and four stationary. We also have our game crew, which I call mini-me's, that run around the field with the headsets. I'm sure everybody, if you've seen them run around on the field, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
And
they wear
they're doing things heads. Like they're getting the people to play the
games. Getting
all
of our pre-game. Yep, they're getting all of our pre-game ceremony participants. They're meeting them. They're getting them downstairs into the green room. They're talking them through, this is what you're actually going to be doing. This is when we're going to walk out onto the field. This is when you should wave into the camera, and then they get them back off the field, and then yes, they continue on. They pick out all of our contestants, including the Hot Dog Derby that we just heard. But they do a lot, and then of course our K crew as well, which is our all-female fan interactive team. So you can see them most of the time on top of the dugouts, cheering the team on, throwing T-shirts, even throwing bags of peanuts, interacting with fans throughout the stadium, and of course in the stands. So
now, as you mentioned, I have seen you in action up there in the booth when I filled in a few games. As PA announcer. During the game, you are wearing a pair of headphones. You've got a walkie-talkie. You've got a pair of binoculars.
Oh, yeah.
There's a giant three-ring binder.
Yes, it's Tech Central up there. Two cell phones. A whole ClearCom box where I have about 10 or so channels on there.
And you're constantly switching from channel to channel. You're talking
constantly.
To people the whole game.
I'm constantly talking to all three groups that we have. I usually just leave my button on, so I'm constantly talking. So whether they're hearing us chit chat or call something that has to go up on the scoreboard, they're constantly hearing my voice in their ear.
Does it ever get stressful? I mean, is this an anxiety thing, or is there a rush? Is it fun?
It's fun. It's always fun. I always try to, especially on opening days and back during the postseason as well, I always try to take a moment just to myself, whether it's as simple as going on the elevator and riding from floor to floor, but I always try to take a moment to myself and just remind myself that there's not a lot of people that get to do what I do. And I love opening day. I love the start of the season. And so it's just reminding yourself that even though there's a whole lot of stress, there is a whole lot of fun that goes with it too.
Now, of course, this is a full-time year-round job for you, right?
Yes, full-time, which a lot of people... always question me about, which I think is comical. But yes, full-time position. We are full-time job around the season. We're really just...
So what are you doing in the off-season?
One season, as soon as one season ends, we're getting ready for... We pretty much put that season to bed and we're getting ready for the next. So, you know, October, November, we're hiring game crew. We're hiring production staff. We're hiring K-crew, our full-time intern. We're getting all of their uniforms prepared. We're brainstorming as a whole department, sitting down, coming up with all the in-game features. What are our headshots going to look like? What's the intro video going to look like? You know, what is there something that we want to do differently this year? All of that. So that takes months to plan and months to kind of link up with sponsors and marketing and have the season prepared by the time we get here in March.
So give us a little preview. What's special and new on the agenda for opening day this year?
We're actually taking a step back. Last year was a very big opening day for us. 50th season, we knew that we wanted to do it up big, and we did. We had a very, very large production. Even looking back on that run of show, still kind of gives me the chills, as you know, but I also kind of pat myself on the back for us doing such a great job getting through it last year. So really scaled it back. We kind of just went back to the traditional baseball roots today. So
I think a lot of fans actually appreciate it.
I think so too. So trying not to overthink it. Simple, you know, sometimes it's quality over quantity.
So last question for you, Nikki, and I hope I'm not betraying any inside knowledge that gained in the control room, but would you be willing to tell our listeners why you always play John Fogerty's center field during the middle of the sixth inning?
Well, to be simple, because I'm told to.
All right.
Don't have much of an answer for you on that one. That was the song actually selected by our fans, I believe, a couple of years ago. And so we've just stuck with that tradition.
It's a good long break right there in the middle of the sixth inning.
Yes.
That's Nikki Averso. She's the director of event. I'm going to get your title right, Nikki. Director of event presentation for the Royals.
There it is.
And she's really who runs the show out here every day on a game day. Nikki, it's really good to have you here.
Thank you, Brian. Have a good one.
You too. It is opening day, and that means, of course, that part of the magic of this day is that every team is starting the season undefeated. So maybe it seems like a little bit of a downer to acknowledge here, but the Royals are not going to stay undefeated all year. They will lose some games, and many people think they'll lose quite a few this year. That's part of the life cycle of a baseball club. You build a team from scratch, you cultivate the talent, you win the World Series, you say goodbye to a lot of those players, and you start again. So where exactly are the Royals in the cycle of building and rebuilding? Here to talk about that and what else we're looking for this season, we're joined by Toby Cook. He's Vice President of Publicity for the Royals. Hi, Toby.
Hi there. How are you, Brian?
It's great to have you here.
It's great to have you all here again on opening day.
Toby is a huge help to this program as we put together this show each year. And also Greg Eklund, who reports on sports for KCUR 89.3. Greg, great to see you.
Good to see you, Brian. Good morning.
So we have heard Royals General Manager Dayton Moore and Manager Ned Yost both openly use that term rebuilding over the past couple of
years. Have we?
I
didn't hear Dayton use it yesterday when he was chatting with the media.
Well, that's good to hear. Tell us about that. In the broadest sense, you know, what does that word mean, Greg?
Well, we means, to us, it means a roster change, new faces, but everybody has new faces every year. But to Dayton Moore, it means... despite new faces, they're still going to try to win a baseball game today.
Well, and that's an important point to make. I mean, Toby, you direct publicity for this club. There's a lot of work that has gone into building a program that can be rebuilt. At the same time, they want to win games.
They do want to win games, and we can't control that in the job that we're doing up in the front office. So we do this whole line where we say we can't guarantee wins, we can't guarantee what the score is going to be for the game, but we can guarantee that you'll have a great time at Kauffman Stadium. And for us, really, from a rebuilding standpoint, it kind of means pushing a stone up a hill rather than running along the stone as it's going downhill like it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
As an example, we got up to about 18,000 season ticket members at the height of the afterglow of the World Series. That would be in 2015 when we won it, and in 2016, as these things go, that's when we had the best attendance we've ever had, because people saw us win the World Series. Now we're down, and we have to push that rock uphill because we start off every game with a few thousand less people in the building automatically. And so that's what it looks like for us on the business side. But we have to work together. You know, if they win, we get all of the benefits. If they lose, we can't make any excuses.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the baseball side for just a second. Greg, after those World Series trips, we watched as Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain and Mike Moustakas and plenty of pitching talent all signed big contracts with other teams. That's normal. That's pretty standard procedure in today's Major League Baseball, right?
It is, but I should say that in 2016, the club was fairly intact, but maybe because of the toll of going deep into the postseason back-to-back years, there were a lot of injuries in 2016, and it had an effect on the ball club. But then the players started, because they were eligible to, started determining their own directions. And that has always been the formula of this team, was try to build the farm system, keep the farm system going, because they knew that that day was going to come when those players did move on.
Well, let's talk about that farm system. Last year, before the 2018 season, the Royals' farm system was not getting a lot of positive attention. Baseball America, I think, rated it 29th out of 30. That was at the beginning of last season. It's a little different this year, right?
Well, you know, they rank them. I don't buy into those rankings all
Fair
the time
enough.
Because we have some guys on the ball club now who are products of the farm system that, I mean, as a whole, the farm system may have had that ranking, but that doesn't mean that there are individuals on any of those farm clubs who are incapable of playing Major League Baseball, and that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing some of those guys, like a Ryan O'Hearn, who we saw at the end of the season at first base. He's the first baseman now.
Those are guys who work their way up, started with the Royals when they were young and have now found their way up to the majors.
That's right. I mean, look at what happened with Whit Merrifield. He didn't bloom until his mid to late 20s with the Royals, and now the Royals have made a commitment to him for a few extra years as a product of the Royal system.
You know, Toby, I know you are not in charge of the baseball operation, but I know you spend a lot of time with these guys. Is there excitement about the future of the Royals in the Royals front office?
Well, and that's where the business side can meet the baseball side, because we talked a lot about in the offseason that we have to go tell this story. The Royals had not been in the playoffs for 29 years before they finally got in 2014. And who thought that they were going to go all the way to the World Series? And that was a story of that core group of guys that got good together, and then it was just magical here at Kauffman Stadium for a few years. What we said in the offseason was that we've got another core group of guys that are coming up and they're getting good together. We don't know when they're going to be postseason good together, but we hope that it's sooner rather than later, and we have to tell that story. And at the same time, we also have to tell the story that these are young guys and they don't automatically start playing the entire season the way they played last September. So it's right. A lot of give and take, but there's no question that there's some excitement around here.
Those younger guys you mentioned, some of them are, I think most of them are down at single A or, mm-hmm. or double A, not even at the triple A level yet.
Yeah, and that means that if you were to say they're all going to advance 1 year and then the next year, that we're 2 and 3 years out from being in contention. I don't buy it, partly because I can't. I have to say, we're going to win sooner rather than later.
Official Royal spokesperson.
Yeah. There was something special that happened to that 2014 team after they were a few games below 500 after the All-Star break, where they just, something happened. And we all hope that something could happen magically this year to at least make them a lot better than they may appear to others on paper. But, you know, what's most gratifying is that it feels like the fan base has given us the benefit of the doubt. This is what's happening now, and we're very, very excited about what could happen in the future.
I can tell you one thing that happened from 2014, and you'll recall this, is that when they brought in a veteran like Raul Ibanez, who told them, you guys don't realize the talent that you have. And it took a veteran from the outside to tell them that they're better than what they were showing on the field, and then they went out and did it.
We're looking at players like Brady Singer, who's a pitcher, first-round draft pick last year. You've got a catcher, MJ Melendez, who's actually only 19 years old, but there's a lot of talk about him. There's real prospects here.
Oh, absolutely. And they brought up one of them at the end of last year, Valorio, the catcher.
Who hit the first home run of spring training, I remember, this year.
Sure. And the only reason why he's in the minors now is they prefer for him to play every day to get experience as opposed to playing every fifth day and sitting on the bench. And I think you're going to see a lot more of him in the next before this year is over, especially because of the injury to Salvador Perez.
I mean, let me ask you an honest question. That term rebuilding, when a lot of people hear it, they hear it as a euphemism for
we're going to be bad until we're good.
We're going to lose a lot of games.
Yeah.
I mean, you said the fans you think have stuck with you. They believe in the process. How many hundred lost seasons do you think fans would be willing to endure? I guess is the question.
Not very many, and I think the absolute goal, even with the baseball side, as a guy who works on the business side, Dayton has said, I don't want to lose 100 games again ever in my career. Mm-hmm. I think that was a very painful experience for him to have to go through last year and the amount of losing. I mean, we just couldn't score any runs for about 2 months, it felt like. And then they just played so much better after that. We can say that we're going to shy away from small market. We can say that we're not going to use the term rebuilding, but we have to rely on the goodwill of this fan base to understand that you just don't turn this thing around overnight. And I think that has helped that we did build up that goodwill.
You know, one of the constants in the midst of both the big winning seasons and these rebuilding seasons, Greg, has been manager Ned Yost. This will be his 10th season leading the team. He's already the winningest manager in team history and also the losingest. He's just been here a long time. How big a factor is he in a rebuilding time as you're developing these new young players?
I guess if you want a steady force, you would have to turn to him as that one steady force. And to be honest, I'm surprised he decided to stick around this long, because he takes a lot of pride in seeing the development of players. Well, he saw that in that wave of the Hosmers and the Moustakases, and quite frankly, I'm surprised that he was willing to especially through 104 losses last year, endure another wave of that at this stage of his career.
He could be enjoying a very nice retirement out on his
out
land.
On his land down there in Georgia. And I thought, you know, he saw those guys. They achieved the ultimate. I thought maybe, you know, he would have gone in his own direction as well, but that's not the case.
He is still here. He'll be in the dugout today. Let's turn to some of the positive things that people are saying about this season, those who are saying the Royals do not necessarily need to lose 100 games. If a few things go right, they could even do considerably better. At least a few people are writing that. I'm curious what you two see as the positive aspects of the club on the field this year. What gives you some hope, not just about the future, but about the present, Greg?
I would say because of the imbalanced schedule, and the fact that they're playing more Central Division teams than the teams in the other division and interleague play, I think that weighs in favor of the Royals, because I don't think this is a dominant division. This is a team where I think nobody is really able to predict a clear winner. The Indians are still pretty good. Can't write off the Indians. They did unload some of their veterans, but you can't discount them easily. But all the other teams behind the Indians, you just don't know what you're going to get with them. So if the Royals find a way to compete and win against the teams in their own division and somehow maybe keep themselves in contention toward the end of the year, the division winner is going to go to the playoffs. But the wild card will probably not come from the Central.
Yeah, sort of could be anybody's game, but only if they make it to the top of the division.
Correct.
Toby, what are the storylines that you're seeing that you like?
My focus oftentimes is on how the fans feel about this team. And as much as the fans love this core group that came up, and I think a part of that was that the fans were able to watch how much fun Hosmer, Moustakas, Kane, Salvador Perez, Danny Duffy were having. And then the players were getting a kick out of how much fun the fans were having watching them on the field.
Right.
It was just this mutual love for each other. As good as that group was, I've now heard from many people that this group of guys that are coming up right now are just some of the best young people they have ever seen in baseball. And I've gotten that unsolicited from Ryan Lefevre, our broadcaster, Buddy Biancolana, who was on the 1985 World Series team.
Blast from the past.
Who just volunteered. This is an incredible group of guys. This, if you're worried about the youth of America, in terms of baseball, let me tell you that I've heard it from more than one person, that with the Royals, and maybe even in baseball in general, they're the most respectful. They are the most charity-oriented group of players that they had seen in a long, long time. They'd put them up against any sort of era of player, and they're good ball players. I mean, all that's well and good. If they're not very good ball players, it's going to be a little awkward, but that's very exciting.
Well, I mean, one of those young ball players who is getting a lot of attention today, obviously, is the opening day starter, Brad Keller. Greg, here's a guy who a couple of years ago, it would have been hard to imagine putting together a storyline where he was the opening day pitcher in a major league game.
No question. He did not play Major League Baseball before last season. Then he comes up with a 9-6 record with an ERA of just over 3, which is, I believe, put him in the top 10 in the American League. And now just a year later, he's the opening day starter. Another example of one of those, because of the scouting that the Royals have, they plucked him from another organization. And not only are they trying to develop their own, they're always on the lookout of diamonds in the rough like a Brian Keller, and they found one.
Yeah, Brad Keller. And you know, a lot of folks are also mentioning that this is an incredibly fast team. You know, that teams can't excel in every area every year, but speed is something that this Royals team does not have a problem with.
I like that. Because of the dimensions of this ballpark, you're playing 81 games here. I think you need outfielders who can cover ground defensively, that can shag the fly balls that stay in the ballpark. And I like the excitement that they create on the bases by putting pressure on the other team's defense to make a play. And as long as they can get on base, it starts with getting on base.
Right.
But then once they get on base,
they might take another one.
Yeah, that's right.
I read an article in The Athletic predicted that the Royals could steal 200 bases this year, Toby, which would be the first time that's happened in more than a decade.
Yeah, and you talk about fan reaction and falling in love with a team. A couple of years ago, I remember a moment where, and I don't know who scored first or who scored the tying run and the winning run, but Jerrod Dyson and Terrence Gore on a play scored the tying run and the winning run in the bottom of the ninth inning, and this place went nuts. And we saw that over and over. So, yeah, the very good defense, a much better bullpen, and speed on the base paths is gonna make the fans really, really like this team this year.
You know, Toby, you mentioned that a lot of what you spend your time on is the fans' experience of the game, which is both on the field and off the field. I wonder if you might mention a couple things that you're excited about off the field this season. What are we going to notice either different at the stadium or out in the community?
Well, a couple things from a charity standpoint. We do a 50-50 raffle every game.
Yeah.
And then we raise a ton of money by people gambling at a baseball game. Sports betting rules are changing,
but we've
done 50-50 raffles for the past several years, and for the first time we're putting it online. So at 9 o'clock in the morning, if you are in Missouri, if it registers somehow with this geo-sensing technology that you're signing on from Missouri, you can get on the 50-50 raffle. The proceeds from the 50-50 today go to Midwest Flood Relief with the American Red Cross. We'll give away between $1.5 and $2 million a year again this year with Royals Charities. And then the other thing I would like to say is that we're trying to keep things as baseball simple and affordable as possible. We're in a position to need to do that because our season ticket member base is down and we need to fill this stadium. But we've got this expanded menu of items that you can get for $3, $4, and $5. A $5 beer at Kauffman Stadium, Greg. It really exists this year.
Really?
Yeah.
But it is a Miller Lite.
Yes.
So you're all right.
I should point that out. The official beer of the Kansas City.
Yeah.
Royals.
All right. There you go.
So we've got some inexpensive items for our fans, and we just want them to enjoy it.
Well, and I know there's a lot of other things out, new stadium foods and things like that. Greg Eklund, you experience this game very differently when you come out here as a reporter and
as a
journalist.
I don't get a chance to drink those $5 beers.
No, alas. But you do get to watch how the game seems to be going. You talk to lots of fans. You know them in the rest of your life. What's your sense of where the fan base is coming into this 2019 season?
Well, I think people still like coming to the ballpark, and because when the weather gets warm, people just want to spend a day at the ballpark, and fans want to be entertained. And I think the way this team is put together, this is, I think, compared to a year ago, and I think Ned would even admit it, they got stagnant last year. And I think this is a team that plays an exciting brand of baseball, and I think the fans are ready to see an exciting brand of baseball again.
One thing I'm excited about, Toby Cook, is the Royals Access Pass that lets people just pay a monthly fee and come to as many games as they want.
Yeah, and I always say we try to beat each other's brains out on the field, but we copy what everybody else is doing in Major League Baseball, and it had been successful in a lot of franchises. So, yeah, the pay once and come to as many games as you want is something that we've expanded this year, and it's kind of part of just getting people back into the seats.
We'll see if it works. Yep. That's Toby Cook. He's Vice President for Publicity of the Kansas City Royals. And Greg Eklund, who reports on sports for KCUR 89.3. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it. We will take a break now. If the Royals are to rebuild this season, they will have to stay healthy. So when we come back, the man who oversees the medical well-being of the boys in blue. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison in for Steve Kraske. We're coming to you live today from Kauffman Stadium on opening day of the 2019 baseball season. Yesterday, former U.S. Ambassador Thomas Pickering talked with us about current U.S. foreign policy. You can hear that in other previous episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, the local woman whose father and whose son were killed by a white supremacist will be joined by a man who formed a white supremacist group only to leave it to battle against violent ideologies. That's tomorrow on the program. Today, we're talking with some of the many, many men and women off the field who make baseball happen in Kansas City. One of those is Dr. Vincent Key. He's the head team physician for the Royals. He's also an orthopedic surgeon specializing in sports medicine at the University of Kansas Hospital. Dr. Key, welcome to Up to Date.
Thanks for having me.
Really glad to have you. I have to say, all the gigs a physician could have, Major League Baseball team doctor sounds like one of the best.
It's a good gig if they're healthy.
Ah, okay. And that has not always been the case with these Royals, has it?
Time to time, these guys get hurt. It's just part of the business.
What's the most common health problem they come down with?
Usually shoulder elbow issues. Guys starting into the season or getting fatigued during the season. Throwing is not a natural motion. That's what I tell people all the time. So it's really the fatigue of the season, the wear and tear of the season. Sometimes some lower leg injuries, hamstrings, calves, things of that nature.
And tell us what exactly the head team physician of the Royals does. You're not personally treating every one of these players, are you?
I'm treating a lot of them.
Okay.
When I talk about that, people ask me that. They think it's just the major league guys. And fortunately for me, I'm responsible for 10 teams, including our two Dominican teams all the way up.
Oh, really? So you make the rounds of the farm system?
Well, we have docs in every city, thank God. Yeah. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a practice. But I coordinate with all of our team physicians in all the other cities.
Wow. And what does that mean? You're consulting when there are injuries in particular, or is it a more preventive training program?
It's all of that. It's preventative. If guys get injured, unfortunately, if they need surgeries, I'm doing surgeries on the guys. People talk about Tommy John surgeries and things of that nature. I do quite a few Tommy John surgeries. I actually did one yesterday.
Oh, wow.
It's the breadth of orthopedics at times, but there are other issues that crop up. Guys have hernia problems. Guys have different medical issues, and we have our team internist, Dr. Joe Nolan, and we have a whole legion of physicians at the University of Kansas Health System to provide care for the athletes.
Well, and you mentioned that you do have a practice. This isn't your only gig. You are also seeing regular patients off the street.
I tell these guys all the time, I'm like, you guys are my side gig. my real gig is, the 14-year-old kid that comes in with shoulder elbow issues, or the 60-year-old person that needs a knee replacement, or a kid who unfortunately has blown out his ACL and needs an ACL reconstruction. So, yes, I have a practice on the side, But in my training, I trained in Los Angeles. I was around a lot of guys who did baseball. Dr. Frank Jobe, who invented the Tommy John surgery. Well, I was the last resident to work with him before he retired.
That's pretty cool. So
I've been around it. It's just a matter of how to manage it.
I have to think that that 14-year-old who tore his ACL, it must be pretty cool for him to know that the doctor that he's going to is the guy who takes care of the Kansas City Royals.
Well, it is. I'm blessed, I guess, in the sense that I've been trained by a lot of great men and women who have shown me the skill set to be able to do it.
You know, you mentioned Tommy John surgery, and of course, it's hard to hear that right now in Kansas City without thinking about catcher Salvador Perez, who is out for the season and just had Tommy John surgery. Remind us what that even is.
When people talk about Tommy John surgery, it's actually a reconstruction, meaning that you tear your ulnar collateral ligament. And so in tearing your ulnar collateral ligament, you have to replace it with a tendon. And so we use a tendon in the forearm, or we use a tendon in the lower leg to accommodate for that. So that's a reconstruction. And then there's a newer procedure out now that I'm doing that's called a repair. And some individuals, you can actually repair the ligament and not give them a new one, which is a little bit shorter time frame in terms of return to play.
Is baseball harder on players than other sports?
Yes, in the sense of the volume.
Yeah,
and it's the volume that happens. Again, throwing is not a natural motion, but what happens is that these kids, starting at about 13 years old, you have to prepare yourself to throw. Used to be when you were little, you fall out of bed, you start throwing. But as we mature and these kids hit puberty, the forces on the shoulder and elbow go up. So you have to be able to stretch out tissue. You have to be able to strengthen. Most people think it's strength, strength, strength. Well, it's flexibility as well. And so, but if you don't do that, the forces on the elbows are going way, way up.
Yeah, there's no other sport either where players are playing 162 games a year.
No, and that's the thing. And then you couple that with youth athletics,
right,
where they're playing all year round, and they don't give these kids time to rest. And you've got an underdeveloped kid trying to do the same thing as a major league guy does, invariably something's going
to
happen.
It sounds like that's of concern to you, the way kids are taking part in sports.
Well, I'm passionate. I mean, I have four kids. I have two sons that play college football. I have another son who's a sophomore in high school that plays baseball. And then I have my daughter who does track. She throws the javelin and things of that nature. But I'm really passionate about the kids because I look at each of those kids as if they're my kid. And I've been sitting out at the ballpark where a kid's thrown 110 pitches in a game, and he's shaking his elbow, and it breaks my heart, actually.
Yeah. I imagine, you sound like you're a baseball fan.
I am.
But it must change your enjoyment of the game.
I look at it differently. You're right. I look at it from a lot of different perspectives, not just as a pure fan.
So, obviously, not only good taste, but also federal law would keep you from sharing any deeply personal stories about medical treatment you're giving these players. But I wonder if there are any experiences you've had as the team doctor that really stand out in your memory.
Couple. There was a couple years ago, Alex Gordon went down in left field. I had to go trotting out to attend to him. That's the one thing. Our training staff is so good. Nick Kinney, Jeff Blum, Kyle Turner, Chris DeLucia. We have a very close knit of guys, and we work hand in hand. They're my best friends, and that really helps when you're working with guys you really, really like. And I love those guys. And so, yeah, we've had issues. We had Omar Infante get hit in the face with a baseball probably about 4 years ago that we had to deal with. There's just things here and there that we have to deal with different players.
One of those, I guess this is true of a lot of physicians, but you never know what your day is going to hold until you get there.
No, it's a box of chocolates, because the thing is that as a team physician, I'm responsible for the other team as well. That's the other thing most people don't know. I don't travel in baseball until the playoffs or the last home stand is on the road. So we've had other players need an appendectomy. We've had other players have different medical issues here and there. So I'm responsible for both teams.
Wow. Dr. Vincent Key is the head team physician for the Kansas City Royals. Busy day for you. Thanks for taking a few minutes of it with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you being here. So we continue our conversation with the people who are responsible for making things happen at Kauffman Stadium on opening day. You know, for some people, it isn't a baseball game at all if they don't have their peanuts at the ballpark. And joining us is someone who's been delivering those peanuts to faithful customers for 4 decades. Dan Nash is a peanut vendor who works for Aramark. You might even recognize him for his laser-accurate, long-distance peanut delivery. Or maybe his voice. Dan, can you give us your peanut call right now?
Well, hopefully I don't blow out the mic, but
all right.
we'll
give it a shot.
Peanuts!
Okay, there it is, peanuts. And how long have you been doing this exactly, Dan?
This is the start of my 40th year. Wow. I started in June of 1980, so I've seen all the World Series and playoffs and things like that through the years.
You've seen some good years and some bad years.
There were a few bad years, but when it's baseball, it's always good.
Well, take us back to 1980. What made you apply for this job in the first place?
I'm not really sure. I think it just needed a summer job, and it was June of 1980, and I was always a big baseball fan, so I started working out here, applied, started working, and just never left.
You work pretty much every game?
Probably about 75 of the 81 games a year I'll work.
That's a lot.
It is, but it's fun. It's probably the most fun job I could ever find.
Now, do you always work in the same section of the stadium, or do you move around?
Pretty much. You'll see me the whole first base side, lower level, probably about 90% of the time.
Okay.
Sometimes on the third base side, and almost always selling peanuts.
Is that a seniority thing? Do you kind of get your pick of the areas the longer you've been here?
Yeah. I'm actually, of the food vendors, I'm the number two in seniority, and the number one guy, he likes to work on the third base side, so it works out well for both of us.
Does he sell peanuts as well?
Most of the time he does.
So this is the preferred thing. If you're a food vendor, when you've been here long enough, you get to sell peanuts.
Yep. It's the good product, and it's not as hard on my legs as it was in years past.
So I guess I'm curious, do you wear a Fitbit, or have you ever tracked how much walking and stair climbing you do?
We always used to wonder about that, and once cell phones came along and my iPhone has a tracker on it, usually it's somewhere around 3 to 4 miles a game,
yeah,
and that's up and down steps, but it works.
Do you have sort of a training regimen to get ready for all that, or have you been doing it long enough that your body's ready to go?
I should have a training regimen, but I don't, and I don't go down to spring training, which would be great. Just generally walk out here, and I'm pretty much ready to go. The arm's ready.
The arm's ready. We did just have the team doctor here in case you need a need a little checkup. I wondered, have you ever had a problem, a muscle issue or a cramp or something?
You know, every once in a while, like during the summer, you might get cramps. I've never twisted my ankle or anything like that, had anything major, which is probably lucky. In all these years, I've never had to miss them. A significant amount of time.
I have heard a rumor that you have a particularly accurate throw of the bag of peanuts. Are those rumors true?
Most of the time.
So how far from how far can you nail the correct customer with the bag of peanuts?
Generally, I and the Royals like to keep it within about 2 sections. So I can go over two sections of seats and up a little bit. There was the time in the 2014 World Series out by the old general admission in right field, a guy right at the corner of the upper deck hollered at me and wanted a bag of peanuts. And at first I said, no, that's too far. Convinced me to do it and threw it up there. It took me 2 tries, but got it there. At the time we were losing, so that was kind of the highlight of the game for everybody.
Right.
And little unbeknownst to me, the guy standing next to me recorded it on his phone, posted it to YouTube, and next thing you know, it's got 750,000 views and still sitting up there.
You're a viral success.
Exactly.
I hope it was okay with your bosses, too.
They said, let's not do that too often.
Now, how did he get the money down to you? That's the real question.
Wadded it up and dropped it down.
It made its way. So is there a trick to an accurate throw of a bag of peanuts?
Yeah, you got to be careful when it's windy. Mm. I won't throw it as far. And just kind of crunch it up like a baseball so it's not long. And then kind of have a feel for who you're throwing to. And honestly, it's just as much fun to throw it two sections and get the reaction from the crowd and the people seeing it fly past them as it is to throw it to a three-year-old kid or even a 93-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And it just makes their day. And that's part of the fun of doing the peanuts and being at the ballpark.
It's part of the whole experience.
Absolutely.
What do you do when you're not here at the ballpark?
I work for a law firm downtown, Brian Cage.
Of course you do.
And not as a lawyer. And so that keeps me out of trouble. And as I like to tell my wife, 80 games a year, 80 days a year, I'm out here, and that's less trouble I can get into in some other way.
Fair enough. Is this the only stadium you work at, or do you do this for other teams in town?
I also work with the Chiefs.
Okay.
But other than that, just these two, that keeps me busy enough.
So I guess the question a lot of fans would have, you know, they'd think, God, this is a great job. You get to watch so much baseball. Do you actually get to watch any baseball while you're doing this?
Yeah, baseball is actually pretty good for a vendor because you can time it and you're walking down the steps. And by the time if you're walking up, you can turn around when they're ready to pitch. So it's not like football where there's this constant stop and go action.
Right.
But you can watch most of it, yeah.
So you actually get to be a baseball fan and make the baseball fans happy.
Absolutely.
Well, that's Dan Nash. He's in his 40th year now as a peanut vendor here at Kauffman Stadium. Have a great opening day today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here.
And this is Brian Ellison. We're at the K for KCUR's Up to Date, doing our live opening day show. It's a day of hope, of course, thinking about the future and its possibilities. But for at least one guy at the park, opening day and every day is a day to think about the past as well. Kurt Nelson is director of the Royals Hall of Fame, which he actually helped create 10 years ago this season.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Kurt.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations.
Happy opening day to you.
Well, happy opening day to you. Best day of the year.
Absolutely.
So congratulations on the anniversary of the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's been 10, it's hard to believe it's been 10 seasons now that we've had a physical place
right
for the Royals Hall of Fame. So it's been a fun experience to be able to, you know, tell the Royals story, not only the Royals story in Kansas City baseball history, but by extension on the Kansas City baseball history, which goes all the way back to 1884 professionally and before that in the amateur ranks. So, and in the course of that decade now, we've added some really significant chapters to the Royals story, so it's been fun.
We certainly have. And now, I know thousands of people have been through the Hall of Fame. We're looking at it here out over the left field wall. It's painted blue. It's got the Royals logo. There's a scoreboard up above it. And, of course, on top of it, the numbers of the players who've been that have been retired.
Right.
What do people find inside, those who haven't made that trip yet?
What's really, you know, when you come in, we try to tell, we don't like to think that baseball was invented in 1969 when the Royals
right.
came in. So when you come in, you can sort of learn some of the history of those teams that preceded us. There's lots of them, and there's lots of colorful stories and people that were involved in those teams. But, of course, the Royals era begins 50 years ago in 1969. So once you enter the gallery, that's really sort of where the Royals story takes over and really take you through the founding of the club all the way through things that happened last year. We have artifacts up from Whit Merrifield and Brad Keller's great seasons last year. So it'll really take you through the entire history of the Royals and, you know, the 51st opening day now. So there's a lot of story to tell. And it's a really fun, I'm biased, of course, but it's a really fun place to be and learn that history and share it with others.
You may be biased, but you're also the most knowledgeable person I have ever met about this history. And one of the things you do before every game, for those who are out here a little bit early at the stadium, is share a tidbit of Royals history,
yeah.
Maybe an anniversary or a landmark about that day. Well, give us a little preview. What's significant about opening day 2019?
What's significant about 2019 is this will be the earliest opening day in Royals history, superseding an opener that happened all the way back 364 days ago, which would have been the earliest. But this will be the earliest in Royals history. And we've opened seven times. We've opened the season in the month of March. Four of those times it's happened. This will be the fourth time it's happened here at home. So it's a little bit early, so there's a little bit of history there going with that. And then there's some on the schedule, there's some really interesting thing later this year is, you know, we usually play 81 home games. We're playing 80 this year,
yeah,
because on June 13th we're going to Omaha and finish a series against the Detroit Tigers, a home game for us, at TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha, the home of the College World Series, 2 days before that great event starts. And, of course, it will be the very first Major League game ever in the state of Nebraska. So that's, wow, that's sort of its claim to fame there.
That is big news. Now, I didn't prepare for this question, but in the time since our show has started, the batting cage was on the field when our show started, but now the tarp is actually out over the infield. And I'm wondering, has an opening day been rained out before?
We have had three opening days, three home openers, mm-hmm, in Royals history have been rained out. It all happened within a span of 4 years. It was 1981, 1983, and 1984.
Oh, wow.
And it's happened three other times. A season opener on the road for us has rained out, 96, 97, and 2009. So it's happened a few times, not very often, and we're hoping that it does not happen today.
Yes,
we don't want to add to that record. We'll leave that back to the early 80s.
We will hope for the best, and I should add that even though the tarp is out, there are players out on the field warming up, so the rain isn't stopping anything quite yet. Let's jump back to the Hall of Fame, Kurt, where you spent a lot of your time. Is there anything new in the Hall of Fame this year? Are there any exhibits that maybe fans haven't seen before?
Yeah, we try to do something for the prior season accomplishments that happen. And as I mentioned, we have Whit Merrifield, who led the major leagues in hits, the third player in Royals history to do that, along with George Brett and Willie Wilson, and also led the American League in steals with 45 last year, the second consecutive year he's done that. So we have some artifacts that go along with that, with Whit's year last year. Brad Keller, a Rule 5 pick, who's going to pitch on opening day for us. He was our pitcher of the year, so some things of his. And then my favorite thing is we always share with the National Baseball Hall of Fame. We put together an exhibit. And the 1969 expansion of Major League Baseball, which Kansas City really sort of forced that issue. Well, there were three other teams that we pulled into the major leagues with us. And we have an exhibit up telling the story of those four teams.
That was after Kansas City lost the Kansas City Athletics.
That's right.
There was a real push to get a team back.
The A's left after the 67 season, and the American League promised Kansas City at that same owners meeting that they allowed the A's to move, they promised Kansas City a team, but they didn't give it a timetable. They said, well, maybe by 1971, and that wasn't good enough. Senator Stuart Symington was really a power in that time, and he was the one that sort of helped force the issue to get the American League to agree to put a firm date on it, which was 1969. So we pulled into the American League with us the Seattle Pilots, who most people don't remember because they moved to Milwaukee the next year and became the Brewers. And in the National League, we pulled in the San Diego Padres and the Montreal Expos, who are now the Washington Nationals. So we pulled in a couple other teams with us.
Well, I hope that that's just one example of the kind of leadership the Royals are giving to the league this year. We'll see how it works out. That's Kurt Nelson. He's director of the Royals Hall of Fame. It is always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for taking time on a busy day.
Thanks for having me.
You can hear why former Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano doesn't agree with current border security policy. You can catch previous episodes of the program. It's all at kcur.org/up-to-date. You can also find and follow us on Twitter. We're at kcurup-to-date, and I'm at PTSBrian. Don't forget to like KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow, former astronaut Terry Virts will be with us to talk about the exhibition of his photography that's opening in town. It's been a great day here at the K. It's overcast, a little breezy out there. We're hoping the rain stays away, and game time, should you want to make your way out to Kauffman, is 3:15 p.m. Our thanks to Toby Cook and the staff of the Kansas City Royals for all their help with today's show. We also had help from Linda Scher, Chris Pruitt, and Erica Hunzinger. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Elizabeth Ruiz. Most of all, thanks to Steve Kraske for being on vacation this week. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.